What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd, my co-host, back in studio, back in Vancouver, of course, covering the team for The Athletic as well. He is Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, Drancer? Good to have you back, buddy.
It's good to be home, my friend. Yeah, it's my dog's birthday today. So happy. Right. A big happy birthday to Wallace.
Absolutely.
An exciting day. He's already had a pup cup. I might take him for a hamburger later.
Did you wrap up some presents?
Not yet. I'll pick up some toys for him on the way home. But yes, so nice to get home in time for my dog's birthday.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
No, look, a great road trip. Weather was great in Chicago. A couple interesting performances, albeit against middling competition at best.
Yeah.
The Flyers didn't look like the Flyers at all in that game, right? They'd traveled from Seattle the day prior.
Mm-hmm.
That's brutal, right? Like, usually when the Canucks go east, and fans can notice this, they'll get, like, the 2 days, you know what I mean? You get the practice day, you get the time to adjust, and then even then, as we saw in Tampa Bay, your first performance is liable to be flat.
Mm-hmm.
To play the next day after traveling from west to east coasts, that's tough. It showed. And then the Chicago Blackhawks are kind of interesting because there were moments where they looked like they were in that game and at least generated. At the very least, if you're the Blackhawks, you got to like that you've got a Bedard line that can actually like control play and reliably threaten. But that team is so far from ready for primetime. The amount of space they left the Canucks to just sort of dissect them, pass through them offensively. I still liked what I saw from Vancouver offensively. Like, that was what the takeaway I wrote about. And I think the most meaningful one, like, competition aside, the quality of the puck movement, the team level passing, the way that this club was going about manufacturing chances looked entirely different from so much of what we saw last season. Even against a team like Chicago, we'd see the Canucks set up shop in the zone,
mm-hmm.
and really filter things through the point and, you know, really be reliant on those second stick opportunities and opportunistic finishing off the rush. And, you know, now you're seeing the Canucks, you know, three-way passing through seams. And I mean, it did look different materially. And then that side of what the Canucks have tried to do, I think we've seen some pretty auspicious early returns, especially over this three-game win streak as the club has kind of stabilized and become a little bit more consistent. There is, it seems to me, a bit more of an offensive identity forming, even if, as Tocchet, you know, sort of noted postgame, the club's not yet as good as they were last year at protecting the guts.
And the interesting thing about the new offensive identity is I don't think it's really come off the rush so much, right? Which was such a point of emphasis in the preseason. I think the biggest change has been more just personnel, right? Like, you're replacing a lot of Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty minutes from last year. I was looking at it yesterday. Those guys were fifth and seventh in the team in time on ice for forwards, five on five, right? So, like, that, they were playing big minutes for this team, and you know, you're replacing them with Jake DeBrusque minutes, and then even guys like Dan Heinen and Kiefer Sherwood, who are not going to be, you know, world-beating playmakers, but maybe bring a little bit more than guys like Lafferty and Mikheyev, right? And so just the overall level of creativity and playmaking ability in the forward group has improved. And I mean, and then now you've got, you know, Pugh Suter, who is a first-line mainstay towards the back half of last year and into the playoffs. He's centering your fourth line. So you can see the skill and the extra depth that the personnel moves have created for the team.
Yeah, and regardless of where the goals are coming from, the shot rate, right, which is the thing they ranked 26th in the NHL at 5-on-5, it was the reason that I was, you know, pretty confidently slotting them into a tier below credible contender level last season. They're up to 14th. Okay, so now they've had some defensive slippage. They'll need to get back to the defensive identity and then combine it with that to really profile like a team with a shot at winning the cup. But, I mean, that was an area of the game that they needed to improve massively to have contender ceiling in the early going. There's signs anyway that they're getting there.
All right, it's a Thursday. We don't usually do it on a Thursday, but of course Drantz was traveling yesterday.
Everyone accommodated me.
We graciously postponed the crossover to get Drantz in studio for it. So let's get it going right now. I believe they're ready to go.
Let's go.
It's time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. the host of Donnie and Dolly, which you can check out Monday to Friday.
Well, why did
10 to noon on Czech TV.
Why did the extra day make me miss Rick Dhaliwal?
I don't know, you tell me.
Once a week is too much. Once every 8 days, that's the sweet spot, Rick.
We were texting, though.
That's true.
When you were on the road.
But we're always talking, bud. Yeah. I'm always interrupting your walks.
It's easier to handle somebody in text form, though. It's a little bit of distance, a little bit of a buffer. Which I think for Drance certainly helps when I'm dealing with Drance.
100%.
Like to have that buffer in place. How's it going, fellas?
Good. Excellent. Yes. Rick and I just had a big fight.
I was going to say. Yeah. Now, but that's but sometimes you need to bring that edge, right? Sometimes you need to bring that edge to show prep.
What was the fight about?
Yeah.
What was the fight about, gentlemen?
We didn't really have a fight, Thomas. I was making a comparison to Miller and Pedersen, right?
Oh, got it.
It was a joke.
Who slashed who?
Yeah.
So that just flew over your head,
it did,
Thomas?
Yep.
Just straight over. Yeah.
I even made the follow-up joke about practicing with an edge, and you still didn't.
No, I know. I was honestly hoping that they'd fought. Like, one of them was Team Pedersen, one of them was Team Miller. I know that.
Well, we all know who that. Yeah, like, that's I know not that hard to.
Donnie would have been Team Miller.
Yeah.
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 So where you guys land on this? Biggest deal ever, or nothing at all? Miller and Petey mixing it up in practice.
Well, our poll question, our Delaney's OK Tyron Langley inbox poll question, I don't know if I can say that on
well,
this
you just
show.
Did.
I 650, I just 650, did. Dunbar Lumber text line.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't want to get Dunbar Lumber upset with me.
We're going to give you the Dunbar
you
Lumber.
You don't want to get on Ken Priestley's bad side, all right?
Oh, I mean, listen, Ken Priestley's team beat our Port Moody team last year in the under-18 A1 playoffs, but that's another story. Anyway, overwhelmingly in favor of not a big deal, which I don't find surprising because we've seen this sort of thing before. I think most people think that I'm in this category, that it's a good thing. And that there is, I know it's early in the season, but there's a monotony to the season. And it's something that might, I don't know if this is what JT Miller had in mind, it just wakes people up a bit. I don't think it's a bad thing. And you know what, it's just a bit surprising in that it's early and they've won three straight games.
Yeah, that's it.
But, you know, every once in a while, waking people up, whether it's on purpose or not, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Okay, and last year, did we not go through this with Garland?
Yep.
And Joshua?
Yep.
Yeah, so, and didn't we see a fight at practice in Buffalo a couple of weeks ago?
Yep.
I think we did. What surprises me is, you know, it's three straight wins. You're feeling good. Usually this happens when you lose a ton of games. Remember when St. Louis, they had the fight after the Canucks beat them in St. Louis, and that was the year they won the Cup. They fired the coach and the whole nine yards. You usually see it during adversity, but this was two high-profile guys. Two totally different personalities. Miller's got the fire in the belly. Pedersen's laid back. Maybe it gets him going. You never know, right? But rumors of these guys having friction, it's been out there for years. You'd have to live under a rock and not cover this team and not know and hear about the friction of these two guys in the last 5, 6, 7 years, right? So, but that's always been out there. I mean, we hear it all the time. But maybe it gets him going. Maybe it gets Pedersen going.
I think it's one of those.
Maybe he gets worse.
He's been playing better. I think the truth is, though, is that while it's not a big deal by any means, if Matthews and Marner were slashing each other in practice, that would be, I think, wall to wall. You might get your own special on it. On some of the Canadian sports networks, right? If this happened, if it was McDavid and Dreisaitl going at it, the whole hockey world would talk about it. So it's not nothing. These things get talked about, but that doesn't mean that it's something either. It lives in that nebulous space between nothing and something.
It's worth noting, but it doesn't have to be like a cause for concern.
No,
of course we're all going to acknowledge that it happened, and we're all going to weigh in on it. But again, like, I think the Garland Joshua point is a really good one. And I don't, even beyond the specifics of the players involved, like, these are hyper competitive guys.
Yeah,
you know, even Elias
Pettersson, in a hyper competitive environment.
Even Elias Pettersson, who, as you say, much more laid back publicly, right, than JT Miller. I mean, we've seen his competitiveness throughout his career. Like, these are proud guys going at it. Moments like this are going to happen. And, you know, again, the Garland Joshua example, like, sometimes it's great. Sometimes it helps them get past something, find an understanding, and play even better out there. So,
not to mention, there's been a talking point.
I think it's going
to... Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, but I think it's going to get more oxygen. Sorry, Thomas. But it's going to get more oxygen depending on what happens against Pittsburgh on Saturday. If Elias Pettersson breaks through, comes up with three goals, and he comes up with a Ryan Gold type performance, three goals and one assist, then it's like, hey, can you guys fight every practice? This seemed to work. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. Then we'll still be talking about it, which is good for a talk show.
So
talk shows.
Well, maybe.
And Thomas. Go ahead, Jamie.
I was going to say, maybe Pettersson will score and the crowd will chant JT Miller thanking him for getting Pettersson going.
Yeah.
Yes.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. But we got to remember, these are public figures on the most important sports team in this province by a country mile. And you don't think, hey, and the Canucks are lucky, because I'll tell you something else. There's no video. You know, there's no video component to this thing that happened at practice. Because can you imagine? Because Farhan Lalji came on our show today, and he said allegedly Miller called him a baby at the end, and it got quite heated, more than, you know, some people are. I talked to some media guys that were there and saw it yesterday, and yeah, it wasn't just physical. There was some yapping back and forth. These guys are public figures. I mean, for this, this is a Canadian market, and as Don said earlier, if this happened in Columbus or Carolina or Florida, I mean, it would not be as big as it is in Vancouver. Let's be honest about that.
If you go back, though, through Rick Tocchet transcripts over the last week to 10 days when he's been asked about Pettersson, like, wanting to see, you know, harder practices from number 40 has been something that the Canucks head coach has talked about. So, you know, to some extent, right, the fact that there was a, you know, a battle drill or a race for the puck that got heated, I wasn't at practice, to be clear, that sort of sparked this reaction. I mean, with number 40 in the middle, that might be something the organization welcomes, frankly.
I bet it is. And because, like, I'd imagine during the tiff, the scuffle, Pettersson would have been moving his feet, which, if you also look back at those Rick Tocchet transcripts, is something he brought it up yesterday, Thomas.
Yeah.
That, again, he wants to see this star player making all this money a season. He wants to see him do something that, you know, a lot of minor hockey players have trouble with. Yep. He wants them to see him move his feet. And every time I hear that clip, I'm like, behind closed doors, Rick Tocchet must be looking at that video and saying, my gosh, it's move your feet, man. Because that's when he's had success, he moves his feet. He shoots the puck more. He's way more confident out there. And that's what I just can't help. Whenever I hear that, I'm like, man, it must just be driving them nuts right now.
So where did these guys come from? Tocchet, Rutherford, Alvin, they came from Pittsburgh, who has got a superstar who's the first on the ice, last off the ice, sets the template, the tempo for practice, is an absolute pro on and off the ice, never stops getting better. These guys just want their superstar to act as a hockey player like Sidney Crosby. I mean, think about it. I mean, when you hear Tocchet, Rutherford, and Alvin talk about Crosby, there's a huge smile on their face. They love talking about the guy. He's going to be in town in a couple of days, and you're going to see the smiles.
Oh, yeah.
Again, they're going to be asked about Crosby. That's all they want, is their superstar in this city to do what the superstar in Pittsburgh does, and who's an absolute great pro on and off the ice and never stops getting better.
Well, and telling that Rick Tocchet dropped the Sidney Crosby comparison for Quinn Hughes this week on the road trip, right?
There you go.
And not saying that's what he's aspiring to, saying I'm seeing the same things.
The same type of player,
the same type of mentality that Quinn Hughes has, or that Sidney Crosby has. I mean, that, as you say, Rick, that's the highest praise, really, that Rick Tocchet can give to a player.
That's it.
And I think that's what he wants to see from Pettersson, too.
How good they are, how much they've accomplished. They're always trying to get better. And that was a great clip that Tocchet gave when talking about Quinn Hughes. Anybody I know that's been around the Penguins, and Thomas, you know this, and they watch the work ethic regarding Sidney Crosby on the ice, but especially off the ice. Apparently, his workouts are like hard to watch.
That's it. That's
They're just exhausting, and it, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, that Elias Pettersson doesn't work hard off the ice or anything like that, but there's a drive there that is second to none, and I think they just at this point expect it from anybody, but especially a star, or they'd like to see an effort in that direction, or at the very least.
Guys, did you? I don't know if you saw the Pettersson interview yesterday.
Yep.
You know, visually he just
defeated.
He looks defeated. Like Donnie said it, he looks defeated. You want to see him smile and laugh, and that's a big part of being a successful pro athlete, is loving what you do. But I mean, looking at that interview, it just looked like he would rather be in 40 different places than do that interview with Farhan yesterday. Somebody's got to put
the fun media. He was not dissimilar to me. I took a run at him just talking about the struggles on the road trip, and he was really good talking about like Nils Höglander, pretty good talking about sort of the line. Yep. But when it came to like, how do you feel about where your game's at? I don't think he has a ton of appetite to discuss that in the media right now. I think he probably feels like it'll be dissected unfairly or something like that because,
pulling
teeth would be would be putting it kindly.
You want to see him smile. Yeah. I agree with you, Rick. You'd love to see him smiling and having fun, but I think there's a bit of a catch-22 there, too, when he's in front of the camera, right? Like, you're making 11.6, you have 0 goals in 6 games. If you're yucking it up with reporters, I think a lot of people are going to turn around and say, hey, shouldn't he be taking this more seriously? Shouldn't he be, you know what I mean? It would be easy to criticize him almost being too positive in that situation as well. He's in a tough spot, right?
Where's the performative anger?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Okay, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Maybe not yucking it up, but maybe some anger, emotion. This is unfair, but his personality, he's stoic. That's just the way he is. Mm-hmm. And I forget who was saying this earlier in the week that, you know, sometimes when somebody approaches interviews like that, we read into it as people who have followed hockey all our lives, oh, he doesn't care. I think he cares a whole lot. But his personality comes across to us anyway, like, well, this guy he seems emotionless. That doesn't mean he doesn't care. I think he does. People would love to see him, you know, yuck it up or be angry or something. This is just the way he is. You hope there's a fire inside, though.
The other thing I find interesting about this, and Rick, as you said, you know, three-game winning streak for the Canucks, but even, and I admit, starting from a very, very low point, but like pretty clear progress, I thought, from Elias Pettersson on the final three games of that road trip. It's not as if, you know, he played a real stinker that cost him a game in Chicago, and now you're kind of seeing this reaction and him being down and all of that. If anything, I thought it set up pretty well for him to return home and try to build on some of that momentum. And, you know, people will text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line and, you know, accuse me of lowering the bar and all that. But I really did think his game was starting to trend in the right direction. It didn't seem like the time that, you know, teammates or coaches would need to intervene or anything like that necessarily.
But look at his comment yesterday. It's easy to look at my stats and say I stink.
Yeah.
How do you get 11.6 million? You get a ton of stats.
Yep.
So now when you get to 11.6, people want to see the stats. People want to see the goals, assists, and points. And that's when they're not coming as fast as everybody wants them to come. And that's the bottom line right now with them. It's production.
All right.
He's in a Canadian market.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Go ahead.
He can do a lot of the other things, but ultimately he needs to put up a ton of points. You're 100% right on that, Rick. Okay, moving on from Elias Pettersson. Frank Saravalli was on our show, our station on Halford and Brough earlier today, talking about Thatcher Demko's potential return. Frank saying, doesn't sound like anything is close. You know, we've seen him on the ice occasionally here, but not really repeatedly in front of the media on the ice. Rick, what are you hearing about the latest on Thatcher Demko right now?
Okay, so 2 weeks ago, I started getting texts and calls that Demko might be out till December. And I didn't kind of believe them. And I kind of said, okay, I was always told either October, right? October was first, it was late October. And then, okay, we're going to seep into November. But boy, when I started, you know, hearing December, I thought, well, what's going on here? But I do want to say this week I looked into this, and the December thing was shot down. I was told that there is progress being made with Thatcher. They're moving in a good direction. It's just a massive unknown. The Canucks don't know. Demko doesn't know. Nobody knows. No one's got a timeline. No one's got a date. And essentially everyone is guessing, because the one thing he's not doing is turning the corner and ramping it up. whenever you're in an injury situation, there's always a point when you're going to ramp it up and turn the corner. He's not there. That's the way it was described to me, is he's not turning the corner to ramp it up. And when you can't ramp it up, you're not close. So, but I was told this week that there is progress being made. But the progress, as I said, in August, when they started, calling Lankanen, the progress is very slow. Mm-hmm. And it has been slow for months and weeks. And I think we're all just going to have to sit back and patiently wait for this. And people can say a week or two or a month or two. Nobody knows. And you're just going to have – I call it week to week. And I don't know why the Canucks don't say it's week to week, because essentially that's what it is. Every week brings a new week, and you know, either you're going to be closer this week or you're not. But I can report I heard there was progress being made, and they are moving in a good direction, but it's just not happening as quick as everybody wants. That's
guys,
it.
Guys, can I just say something here too? And you know, we've taken our shots at the Canucks and Elias Pettersson and the Canucks' slow start, and of course they won their last three games, and now they're on pace. I know it's very early for the 109 mm-hmm. points that they got last season in real impressive fashion. Demko's not there. Dakota Joshua is not there. And we know how great that line was with Bluger and Garland. And Elias Pettersson hasn't been Elias Pettersson so far. Can you imagine they get those two players back and Pettersson gets his game back on track? I'm not talking Stanley Cup parade here or Stanley Cup riot or anything like that. But I mean, it's pretty impressive where they're at right now when you think about it, and not everybody is there yep. or playing up to par.
They look good. They look good. The scoring depth has held, and Lankanen's been sensational. I'm not sure. Yeah. Like at the same time that we've seen a lot of good stuff, without question, you know, I just need to see an awful lot more before I'm talking about it. I mean, on pace for 109 points, they lose one yeah. game, that pace goes down by, like, you know what I mean? Like, we're still at a part of the season where those swings are massive because the sample's so small. I just need to see more, and I'm really curious for these next three yeah. games because, you know, I think these are decent quality opponents with the exception of Pittsburgh. The schedule isn't going to do the Canucks too many favors against the Devils and the Hurricanes. And, you know, I'm curious to see how they stack up with teams like that because we definitely, I think, should have a sense already that, you bump into Chicago with this Canucks team, they're going to do some damage and probably look pretty yeah. good doing it.
But you know what, Thomas, like I follow this team, cover this team for a long time. That game in Chicago the other night, that's the kind of game they would lose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where you're supposed to win, end yep. of a road trip, and yep. they lay an egg. So it's
it was impressive.
From that point of view, it's impressive they win a game like that.
Yeah, and the quality of the goals they scored.
The ball to run with here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'd give Lankanen I'd give him the ball to run with here and just start collecting these points. And you know what? They're not. They started 10-2-1 last year, the Canucks. That first 10-game segment is so important. I just keep going with Lankanen, and as long as he's hot, keep going with him.
I agree with that in the short term for sure, Rick. I mean, he's playing so well right now, you have to go to him. But if there's this uncertainty around Demko, right, and all of a sudden we're potentially talking about mm-hmm. December, like you're going to need Shelovs to start a chunk of games for you at some point, it sounds like. So I do think you have to have a plan to get Shelov's game, get him some reps, get his game to a place where you can at least feel comfortable starting him, right? Like Lankanen for these three games, sure, no problem. But the longer Demko's out, the more you're going to need two goalies at some point too.
Yeah, and you can't let Shelov sit for too long.
Yeah,
but you also want to collect these points, Jamie.
Yep.
This 10-game segment, if they can start out like last year, boy oh boy, then they're ahead of the game instead of playing catch up.
Doesn't seem like there's a lot of suspense, does there? Like Lankanen is this team's first choice starter and will be, it seems, for the foreseeable, you know, for the yeah. short term anyway. He cemented himself yeah. there. Clear that Tocchet really likes him, and frankly, you know, as good as they looked in Chicago offensively, you know, that game could have been a lot narrower if Lankanen doesn't make some big, yeah. big stops as the game goes on.
Hey, by the way, you know who owes Elias Pettersson, I think, a big thank you, actually, is Jake DeBrusk. for taking some heat off of him. Because normally, biggest free agent signing of the summer, six games without a goal, we'd all be coming on here and talking, oh, Jake DeBrusk. Now, I think he's played just fine. He has a bunch of assists. I'm not concerned about him, but you know he would be front and center in the spotlight after signing that deal in the summer if it weren't for Elias Pettersson. Do you guys have any concerns about Jake DeBrusk without a goal yet as a Canuck?
Well, you mentioned the assist, and you know, he's getting chances. I will say this about him. I do notice him out there. And I know that's maybe the least you can expect, but we've all seen players who have just disappeared through the course of an entire season at times. I do notice him out there. There's speed there. There's effort there. I think it's just a matter of time.
He had
and the guys he's playing with aren't bad either.
I think it was Philly. He had 7 hits, Jamie, in a game. I mean, he's a physical, and the goals will come. Are you trying to tell me that Jake DeBrusk isn't going to score? He's going to go how much longer?
I said I have no concerns. But
that's what I meant.
But Rick, Streaky has been a line attached to him throughout his NHL career in Boston to this point. And by the way, that means two things, right? That means going a 6-game spell or maybe even longer without scoring is not unusual for him historically. On the other hand, right, once he gets going, getting a whole bunch of goals from him over a short span of time is also characteristic. So, you know, I share Jamie's lack of concern, but am I going to say that he's going to go 10 games without a goal, 12 games without a goal? Well, it wouldn't be unprecedented given sort of what he's done in his career to this point, which isn't to say that he's not still providing value, right, and speed and a variety of other good things to the Canucks lineup.
Yeah. Well, you can see him coming through with what you just talked about, the fact he's a streaky player. You know, the other guy we'd be talking about if it wasn't for the other night is Danton Heinen.
Yeah.
No goals. And the other night he gets a couple of goals and, you know, nobody's worried about him at this point. So I'm with you guys. I think it's a matter of time with Jake DeBrusk.
Gentlemen, before we let you go, I just want to speak, you know, continue the conversation about disappointments. Our producer, at Lena Set on Twitter, has shared a photo of Rick actually consuming his pre-crossover banana. And I just want to note how disappointed I am that banana seems normal size.
I gotta say, every time I go to the grocery store now, I'm like, have I just been missing the small bananas?
I'm like,
where are these small bananas? That's a normal banana!
No, it's small. This is small. You don't know the big bananas, the big tall ones. This is small.
Easy.
Donnie, I'm describing a banana. But no, this is a mid to small size banana.
You can find them
small.
At Joe's.
Yeah.
At Joe's.
No.
It's a Seinfeld reference.
That looks like a large
Thomas
banana.
James, help me.
That looks like a large banana to
Thomas.
Me.
Think that's a large banana, Thomas, stop it right now.
Thomas, get a pair of glasses. This is mid to small banana.
Man.
Mid to small.
Man, I'd hate to be judged by a banana-sized queen like yourself.
We need to get a chart with, like, small, mid, extra large, large. The banana sizes per Rick Dolly.
Rick's got one of those charts at home in front of his mirror.
Okay, hey, by the way, exciting news.
It's a small banana.
You'll love this, guys. We're going to be posting the whole crossover segments on our TikTok channel now. I know you guys are big TikTok fans. So there you go. We're going to be TikTok stars.
Wow.
Everyone, it's very exciting.
Definitely clip that thing about the chart.
Yeah.
You're going on TikTok now?
Well, apparently we have a TikTok account. I'm not a TikTok guy. I can't comment on that. It's none of my business, but the whole crossover is going to be on TikTok, so that's very exciting. All right, fellas,
awesome.
Thank you. As always, we'll chat next week.
Thanks, guys.
That is Don Taylor, Rick Dhaliwal joining us here for the crossover, as they do every week.
The chart in his bathroom.
You can catch them on Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. And I'm not on TikTok, but my understanding is that what people on TikTok really crave is long form, in-depth sports conversation segments. That's what really goes viral on TikTok. So we're going to take that app over.
Hey, we're going to learn some dance moves. Okay. We're going to do Rick's trad wife. As a portion of
his
the episode.
Trad wife fruit reviews. We should do the thing where you're playing the video of somebody talking, and then there's like a video of somebody playing Mario Kart running simultaneously. We should do that. You know what I mean? Sure. That's what, like, yeah. Am I right? I'm right, right? That's a thing. Yeah. That's like to keep people engaged throughout the 100%. Whole segment. We should do some of that.
Yeah. So we'll figure out some TikTok bits to bring to the show next time.
We'll
so
start,
that it works.
We'll start.
It's going to be a banana compilation.
Just, I will say, give it till like the end of the season or at least partway through the season. Just edit all of the banana talk.
I honestly think we should just teach Rick how to do the hot to go dance. I feel like that would be a hit.
I'm glad I'm not the only one though who's like trying to find the small banana section in the grocery store now.
Oh yeah,
no. It's like I've never heard of this concept before.
I'm obsessed with finding a small banana. I've never like I honestly, yeah, wild. And then small to mid size, like
this
he has
is a mid to small.
He has technical language to appeal to it. It's like what.
I knows a lot about bananas, apparently. All right. On that note, we'll take a break. 650-650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts in. Lots more Canucks talk coming up. We got some time to really stretch our legs out here and just do what we do best. Talk incessantly about the Canucks, Drancer. Open segments for the remainder of the show here. So we'll get into it. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at dunbarlumber.com. I've been assigned to promo another show on our station, the Halford and Brough Show. Why? Listen to Halford and Brough for your chance. Well, you'll find out here. For your chance to win tickets to the Canucks and Hurricanes, courtesy of Rogers. This Monday, October 28th, the Vancouver Canucks are hosting Diwali Night, presented by Rogers. Join us for the 8th annual Diwali game as we honor the vibrant culture of BC's South Asian community with entertainment, art, and exciting in-game performances. Rogers is connecting Canadians to experiences they love and want to send you to the game. Listen Monday morning for your chance to experience this special night. So there you go. Monday on Halford and Brough, they're giving away a pair of tickets to the Canucks and Hurricanes for Diwali night. So listen to Halford and Brough here on Sportsnet 650. All right. So we'll do the whiteboard a little bit later on in the show. But just one of the notes today, of course, the Canucks have the day off after practicing yesterday. The team did assign Eric Brandstrom and Arshdeep Bains to Abbotsford. Now, of course, neither of those players require waivers. Brandstrom, because he's already cleared waivers once within the last 30 days. Bains is just not eligible for waivers yet. So this can just be the salary cap maneuvering that we talked about before the season. You send him down, you clear some cap space that allows you to toll more today than you normally would. That adds up eventually at the trade deadline. But also Rick Dhaliwal, who reported on Twitter before he came on our show that Derek Forbort is rejoining the team after missing time for personal reasons. So I find the most interesting part of this to be Eric Brandstrom, because as we talked about at the time, right, when they made the Tucker Poolman deal with Colorado, it did not seem like Eric Brandstrom was in their near or maybe even medium term plans to help the team at the NHL level, right? Then he goes down to Abbotsford,
kills it,
looks clearly better than AHL. And a reminder, he's played what, like 150 games in the NHL over the last 2 years? He's been a clear NHL regular player, so not a big surprise that he looks significantly better than the level at the AHL. Derek Forbort leaves the team for personal reasons. Boom, he gets up, he plays three games. And I'm not going to sit here and say he's a diamond in the rough they've found or anything like that, or he's going to transform what the team's doing beyond Hughes and Hronek. But man, especially when you look at it in relief of, or like in contrast to what you're getting from Desharnais, Juulsen, Myers, Soucy on the back end, his puck moving, his ability with the puck, his skating, all of that stands out in a big way. Now, with Derek Forbort coming back. He was a free agent acquisition in the summer. They're both left shot defensemen. I don't know if there's room for them in the lineup. So I don't know if the solution is, well, you have to find a way to keep Erik Brännström in the lineup. But it really just hammered home to me something we've been talking about so much, which is they need more of that in a big, big way on pairs other than the Hughes and Hronek pair. And if Brännström's the short-term solution while they go and figure something else out, that's fine. But when you notice such a big difference, right, bringing in a guy who, again, was not in their NHL plans really as of a couple weeks ago, I think that tells you how much of a deficit there is, how much of an area of need it is for this team still.
Yeah, and I mean, I think so. There's a lot to unpack here. I think you said you're not going to say, or you're not prepared to say, that he's a diamond in the rough, and I think that's responsible at this point. But there's a shot.
I won't write it off.
He's, you know, yeah, guy with draft pedigree, guy with real skill.
But I'm not like planting my flag on that take after three games.
No, yeah. Absolutely not. And that's right. But in terms of an upside case, right? Pedigree, guy with real skill, can do an awful lot of good stuff. Has defensive limitations in his game. Well, that's a profile where the gaps in your performance are teachable things. It's not like, you know, he just can't get there as a skater at the NHL level, right? Like if it's defensive,
it doesn't process the game, yeah,
puck management, some of that stuff. And I guess I'd add, it does seem like this organization or this coaching staff has had success helping players in that specific area.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, you know, if you help Noah Juulsen, at that level, like maybe you get a credible 6-7, right? But if you help Erik Brännström in that way, maybe you get something a little bit more. Maybe you get a 4-5. Maybe you get a 4. Maybe you get more. Albeit, you know, with increasingly remote odds as you sort of
course,
go,
yeah,
as you, the numbers get
as,
smaller,
as you
there.
Build the Erik Brännström ladder,
yeah. Then the other side of this is I don't just think it's what Brännström has been able to bring in terms of stabilizing the third pair for Vancouver, and that third pair has been pretty good. I mean, with Brännström on his left side. For example, the Canucks are +1 in terms of goal differential and have not been outshot and have actually out-attempted their opponents 32-25, so by 7, right? In the other Desharnais minutes, they've been out-attempted by 10, right? Outshot 6-9 and outscored 2-1. So, you know, there's a knock-on effect here where the Canucks bring in Vincent Desharnais to be an experiment. The early returns in that first game against Calgary were enough that he left the lineup immediately. Since getting back into the lineup the last three games, he's played with Brännström, and it feels like Brandstrom's drawing a little bit more out of Desharnais in addition to what he's brought individually. And so there's, you know, the like force multiplier of what you're getting when you put Desharnais with a puck mover, similar to what he was able to do in a third pair role with Edmonton last year when he was partnered with Brett Kulak. So I think there's that side of this too. And then, you know, the other part of it, I guess, is, well, now if you've got a third pair that's not getting outshot, right, and you've got a top pair that's picking its teeth with all comers, that means your issue is really a second pair issue here. And we are at the point where, like, with Soucy on the ice so far, 5-on-5, okay, the Canucks have been outshot 26-60 through six games.
That's nasty.
It's tough, right? Like, now, I'm a Soucy fan. I like his defensive game. I think he was a good bet to be one of those guys who'd been on a third pair his whole career but could play as a second pair guy. I thought the Canucks made a good bet, and we all know what he did last year. Like, he was this team's third best defenseman with some distance until Zadorov went off in the playoffs. He was essential to their success. You know, he hard matched McDavid and did a damn fine job in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, I don't think what we've seen from Soucy is representative of who he is, but right now that Soucy Myers pair is just getting stuck in their own end of the rink with a little bit too much frequency, and you know, Chicago didn't make them pay for it. Tired Philly team didn't make them pay for it, right? The Florida Panthers with their top end largely missing from the lineup didn't make them pay for it. But we'll see, you know, once you face some deeper teams like Carolina and you know, New Jersey and the like. I will say, if you are getting outshot 26-60 over a large sample, like, you're gonna get outscored, you're gonna get shelled No matter how good you are defensively in zone, and Carson Soucy's, you know, with the long reach and the mm-hmm. intelligent positioning and the physical stature and willingness to battle. I mean, he's an exceptional in zone defender, and I still think he's mostly been that over the course of the season, but you know, that's a very, very hard way to live on your second pair.
And Joe and Smithers texts in, so we have holes in our bat in the back end. We knew this and should have paid the extra million to Zadorov. Now we're going to have to give up more assets to fill a hole that we successfully filled last season. That's from Joe and Smithers. Well, okay, I don't think it's...
I'm Team Zadorov.
I think it's very understandable for fans to be like, man, I wish Zadorov was in this lineup.
Yeah.
I don't pretend that it doesn't come at a cost, though, right? Because that's extra salary cap space that you're committing that allowed you to go out and do some of the things we're talking about at forward, right? Because you didn't commit it to Nikita Zadorov.
Yeah, I mean, I think the framing is it's an extra $1.5 million it to have, instead of having Forbert and Desharnais. Right, it's an extra $1.5 million to have Zadorov, but there's also the commitment of term, and so that means there's a forward you like that's off the books.
Yep,
you know what I mean. Like, what? Pick a forward, any forward that the Canucks signed in free agency, except Daniel Sprong. He doesn't make enough, and it's like subtract that guy from the lineup. That's the cost of having Zadorov, and you know, instead, you're slightly shallower on the back end. You know, maybe you're slightly better. I brought this point up on the morning show, and I'll bring it up again. In October of the full Bruce Boudreau season, right?
Yep.
The Canucks traded for Corey Stillman right before the start of the season. And in November, they traded for Ethan Bear. Last year, in October, they traded for Mark Friedman. And in November, they traded for Nikita Zadorov. This year, in October, they've already traded for Erik Brännström.
Yep.
And we're not in November yet, but guess what I'm expecting? Like, you know, sometimes past behavior is a very telling indicator of what to expect next. And the Vancouver Canucks have tended to be, you know, big time tinkerers with their back end.
And just in general, really. But I mean,
but especially
that.
I would
sure.
say especially early in the year with their back end. And that makes sense because they came in here, Alvin and Rutherford, and immediately they were like, what are we going to do on the back end?
Yep.
That, you know, that's why the Volander pick. You know, their highest draft pick ever was used on a right-handed defender. Their most controversial trade, their biggest, like, balls on the table moment was for a trade for a right-handed defender. Like, we know what's kept this front office up at night since they took over the last 2.5 years. And it's the defense and the right side in particular. You know, I'd expect them to continually be looking at upgrades there. Even Desharnais is an example of this. Like, hey, what are we going to take a luxury item shot at? Let's take a shot at a big right-handed defender that we think has some talent to maybe be more than he is today. I mean, like, so much of it has been about addressing this one need. And guess what? It still needs addressing, I think. But also, it hasn't hurt them yet. And we'll see what it looks like as the competition ramps up here.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't hurt them yet. But, like, we can all see it. As you said, once you start playing consistently against better opposition, just because it hasn't cost them games yet necessarily, I mean, that doesn't mean you don't need to wait until it starts costing you games, right? If you can see.
Totally.
Now, maybe the coaches think, like, okay, there's some tweaks we can do, so it's not going to be as off kilter as the numbers you read out earlier, right? And so you don't have to go make a trade, but, like, we can all see the problem looming here. The Zadorov thing, right? It was like the missing Zadorov. Again, totally understandable why fans would feel that way, especially after his playoff run. To me, it becomes much more of a legitimate criticism after we see what they do to address the blue line, right? Because that's always been a part of my thinking coming into this season is, even before you lay out the October-November thing,
things are going to change.
We know they're not going to sit on their hands. And if it is a problem, like, it, you know, through six games, it looks to be in the early going here, they're going to go out and they're going to try to do something. So I guess I'm almost giving it, like, an incomplete right now. You know what I mean? Not even giving a negative or positive grade to the decision to let Zadorov walk. But for me, it's, okay, well, let's see who they bring in. Let's see what kind of trade they make, and let's see how that works, because you don't have to be, you know, a fortune teller to see that there's a good chance we're talking about a new defenseman coming in here at some time before the new year. And, like, it's a tricky situation, though, right? Because you sign Forbort, you sign Desharnais, you know, you're inherently talking about bumping one of them from the lineup or bumping Myers down, who you gave a big commitment to, right? Like, I think it's not necessarily it's not a simple problem to solve. As much as I know that they're going to be very, very focused on solving it, I have a fair degree of confidence that they're going to find a way to at least address it, if not totally solve it. But it's a tricky situation they're in here.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but also, you know, they've got time and they've won some games here.
Yeah,
you know,
they've given themselves some breathing room, for sure.
And now they'll have to keep winning some games, right? This again, is the thing. Like, you know, vibes are great and they should be after a three-game win streak and trouncing Chicago. But, you know, as much as it's like they're on pace for the same number of points as they were, they're, what, 3-1-2?
Yes.
They've won half of their games. You know what I mean? You lose the next two, which, by the way, you could play well and lose the next two, right? Like, you could perform well and just have the hockey gods, you know, take a leak on your head and you're suddenly, you know, 3-4-1 or 3-2, 3-3-1, whatever. And it looks awfully different. And it's like their pace is 89 points, you know? So it's so early. We don't know yet. Sort of where this team's going. I'd expect that this management group's going to wait, see, evaluate, look. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's hard to determine where they'd most likely spend their resources, not just because they've historically done it, but because, as you note, right, it's evident as we're watching even them play well that there's sort of an underlying, hey, this team looks very much less dynamic in those minutes when the Hughes-Hronek pair is not on the ice, and Brännström really stands out because he's helped stabilize part of it.
Yeah, in the short term, with Erik Brännström specifically, I mean, can he play the right side? Like, I feel like he has played the right side in the past. Is there? Do you see a case for, hey, going with, you know, him and Forbort on the third pair just because he has made that difference moving the puck, or do they go back and try to figure it out with Forbort and Desharnais or something like that on the third pair? I mean,
sorry, you mean because Brännström went down?
Well, no, but he could come back up.
He is coming back up.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not saying, no. I'm saying in the short term, is he a healthy scratch, or did you keep him in the lineup even with Forbort back? Right? Because you'd be playing four lefties at that point. But
yeah, and we'll see what, you know, I think everyone's respecting Forbort's privacy here as he's away from the team on a personal matter. So we don't exactly know what the timeline is. Look, Brännström was reassigned today. You know, the clock, helpful to reset the clock when you can. On a waiver eligible player like Brännström, he's not going to clear waivers again. I'm telling you right now, he's not going to clear waivers again, just because now you're into the meat of the season. Injuries already are beginning to afflict some teams. Brännström's young enough. He's got a identity. You know what you're getting when you pick him up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he's performed well. He's probably not clearing again. Right? They really did sneak him down at exactly the right moment.
Yes.
So. Anyway, the team's tolling space here. They'll toll five times the amount of space as they would have otherwise with two players sent down. We'll see if both Baines and Brännström come back up for Saturday's game, but Brännström for sure will. This is awesome, by the way. This is exactly how the club should be managing their roster. Incredible that they were able to reset the decks to do this as quickly as they were and at the relatively low price that they were able to do it at. Like, truly, that's... Strategy versus tactics is great tactics. But, you know, not only do I think Brännström's coming back up, I think he's put himself in a position to have an expanded role. More minutes, you know, could we see some power play two if Sprong remains out of the lineup? Like, I wouldn't be shocked by that at all. I think Brännström's been at the level already, too, that, like, he might even be able to survive a bad moment. Might even be able to survive a mistake. And I think that's really where we should sort of leave this conversation, is just with the summary of, we don't know yet whether or not Brännström is anything, but he certainly sees the first part of an opportunity, right? And is now beginning to sort of write a story that could actually have a pretty interesting ending, or it could be a sort of mid-range help to the team in the short term. But either way, there's possibilities here because he's, you know, taken the opportunity given to him and begun to run with it. We'll see how far he can go.
All right, it is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. We've got more open segments coming up, so you can always send your thoughts in, 650-650, to the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we will continue to dig into some of the things we're seeing in the early going here for the Canucks through six games. Of course, they've got a couple of days off still before they take on Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins on Saturday. So more Canucks Talk next on Sportsnet 650. All right, welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you can send your thoughts and questions in, as always, to the Dunbar Lumber text line. All right, I want to put you on the spot a little bit here, Drancer, sure. Which I know you love. So we're only six games in, right? And what's your rule of thumb for like when you really start to know, like 30? So we're
absolutely 30.
Fifth of the way to knowing, per Drance's rule, anything solid about this team.
Yeah, so 30 games pretty much assures you that all 32 NHL teams will have played 1,000 five-on-five minutes. I like 1,000 five-on-five minutes just as a, you know, sort of, like, what do you know before that? You know? I mean, go look at the NHL standings right now. You know, for example, okay, this is the all-time, I know it the moment I see it, people are getting their dunks in October, and it's going to look hilarious in April. Like, right now, there are people who've been over the weekend sharing screenshots of, like, Philip Broberg, who's point per game, contrasted with Evan Bouchard.
Yeah.
And it's like, not only is Evan Bouchard going to finish with more points than Philip Broberg, he might finish with 30 more points.
He might finish, like, November with more points.
No. He might finish October with more points. Like, Evan Bouchard is going to finish 30-plus points ahead of Broberg. Like, stop it. This is... Are you trying to share a tweet that's going to age poorly?
Oh, I thought you were going to say that would annoy you personally. I was going to say, in many cases, probably yes.
I'm not annoyed by that. I don't care. I'm... What? Why would I care?
You sound a little annoyed.
No, I'm just always... I increasingly refer to it as a mania, where the hockey world collectively says, you know, decides things like... You know, that just like patently, let me give you an example. Andre Kuzmenko is a superstar, and you're an idiot to suggest they should have traded him rather than extended him for a second round pick. What do you mean?
All right.
That was a mania.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. The Philip Broberg screenshot beside Evan Bouchard. That's a mania. I'm sorry. Just this.
People are too eager to get their dunks off.
Here's another one. Evan Bouchard is in the same class of player as Quinn Hughes. That's a mania, a patent falsehood that will reveal itself to be such over time because it's absurd. But it's something people in Edmonton think, a mania. Anyways, let's move on. What were we talking
about? Okay, 30 games.
Yeah, 30 games. I want to see 1,000 minutes played because you can't tell anything this early in the season, frankly. Just look at the NHL standings and how many good teams are at the bottom and how many, you know, teams that are at best mid are, like, undefeated at this point in the season. Like, we don't know anything yet. We won't know anything for a while. I want to see about 1,000 NHL or 1,000 minutes of five-on-five play before I start to sort of be prescriptive in a way where I'm not like, hey, they're trending toward being this, but I'm instead saying, like, this is a good defensive team. I, you know, it's like the equivalent of like 15 and a half, 16 games, like full games of five on five play before I'm really feeling comfortable talking about what a team is.
So with that context in mind, what I'm going to ask you to do is, and you can tier it, you can rank it. Okay. I don't know. I don't care.
I'm ready to go.
What, just like talking points, trends from the first six games, real versus not real? Like, what's most likely to stick, to be real about this Canucks team? What is most likely to be, as you say, a mania? or a mirage, potentially. A mirage that fades as we get to 30 games and beyond here. Do you need time? Do you want me to start, or do you have one that jumps?
Yeah, I mean, no, I just want to be clear to everybody that Jamie is springing this on me.
I am, yeah.
Okay, this is a completely unprepared me, sort of about to do my best here to figure it out. So what's real and what's fake?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
and you can qualify. You don't have to say, like, this is definitely real, this is definitely fake, right? Like, you can, you know what I mean? You can say, like, I'm leaning towards this being real or whatever.
Sure. Well, okay. So I think one thing that stands out to me right off the bat, you know, that I think is a little overheated, to use a favorite term of mine,
sure,
in the early going, and this one shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, like, I don't know that Kevin Lankinen is going to continue to be
level. You can drop some of the caveats there.
Yeah.
Like, I did do just a little bit of prep for this, right? Because I knew it was happening. That's number one in the not real category. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be poor.
No, he's been great.
Yeah, it's just he's been so, so good that you can't... If he was Connor Hellebuck, you wouldn't be like, oh, this is going to continue for the rest of the season, right? And he's not Connor Hellebuck, so... If you're just trying to factor in things that have helped them be successful so far, help them win games, these three games, that could tail off. I mean, yeah, Lankinen has to be number one with a bullet. Again, he could be great, or he could be really good for them for a bunch more games, but no one sustains that type of performance for a whole season.
Only Filip Gustavsson among goaltenders, and Alex Lyon among goaltenders that have played four games, although Lyon came in relief in one instance. Have a higher save percentage 5-on-5. I think Lankinen can still maintain like a really good run. I think he can be average or above behind this Canucks team as the starter. But, you know, he is shooting fireballs at a level that's going to come back to earth at least somewhat as the sample expands. So that would be sort of the most evident one to me right now.
Yeah, and again, I mean, he can still be more like totally adequate for what this team needs to put themselves in a good position, right? Without being, as you said, you know, top three and 5-on-5 save percentage long term here. And yeah, I brought this up on the crossover, but as we talk about the goaltending generally for the Canucks, I mean, I'm going to be very interested to see when they get Shelovs into a game and how he looks, because, you know, like they've got what? I mean, they've got a lot of games in November, and then you're getting into December. They're going to need Shelovs, and especially as the Demko absence and the return to play program and all of that is still kind of shrouded in mystery, I think it becomes more and more important, not just that Lankinen is playing well for them, but that they have a plan for Shelovs and that they get him into games and capable of winning games for them too.
For sure. Do you want to go next, or do you want me to keep going?
Well, that was one of mine, but I can start with a real one.
Okay, go.
Quinn Hughes.
He's going to keep it up.
Yeah, Quinn Hughes is 100% real. And if you think he's the biggest part of this team winning games, like, that's a very good thing.
You're right.
Right? And no, and it, like, I know it's not a hot take or anything, right? But don't take it for granted what level he's at right now. You know what I mean? Like, he's at phenomenally high level.
I don't think people are actually, I actually don't think people are there. I actually don't think people are quite grasping just how good Quinn Hughes has been.
Mm.
You know, like, Cale Makar leads the NHL in scoring, so people are like, Makar and Hughes are both at... No. Hughes has left every other defenseman in the league behind. Okay? And if he sustains the level that he's been at the first six games, he is completely peerless among defenders, and the company that we should be discussing him in is that sub-McDavid tier of the best forwards in the league.
So
the McKinnon-Matthews... that's his company if he sustains the form that he's managed from the first six games.
On the show yesterday, I did the exercise just by myself. Must-win game. Game 7 of a must-win series. You can pick any player in the NHL. How many guys do you take before Quinn Hughes? Connor McDavid, for sure.
Oh, but so once
Nathan McKinnon.
But once you put those... See, I don't like that, because once you put all those caveats on it, I'm still probably taking Makar, because Makar's done it. He's won a Conn Smythe.
Yeah, but if it's based on form right now.
Yeah, but I mean, I have to go with trust, too. Like, I still think there's a level that Quinn Hughes has to hit that I'm not going to, like, not that I'm doubting that he'll get there, but also, I you know, there's an element to which I think the thing that he still has to prove, and I want to give him the space to prove this himself as opposed to anointing in advance, because I think there's going to be ample opportunity for him to do so, and I think he's going to rise to the occasion. But it's like, one of the things I'm most interested to see from Quinn Hughes is to be at this level in the biggest games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see that at the Four Nations, and I think we're going to see that in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year when the Canucks qualify for a second consecutive year and hopefully qualify with a team that has a more credible shot at going deep. And not that they didn't have a credible shot last time out, but an even more credible one this time out. It wasn't his best run of games in the playoffs, but I know that he's got some like classic, you know, some of those like Duncan Keith game on the string type games in his bag. I know we're going to get to see those, but until you do it,
I don't think it's anointing him as like a clutch playoff performer. I think it's just recognizing where his game is at right now. Well, like, if I had to win a game tomorrow, I'm taking Quinn Hughes over Cale Makar.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
yeah. Whatever way you want to phrase it, but you know what I mean, right?
I would phrase it in terms of like impact. Like, I think his impact is sub McDavidian, but there's not many guys.
Yeah, it's like
I just wanted to use the phrase McDavidian. Who am I kidding?
I went through it. And it's like obviously McDavid, McKinnon.
Yep.
I'd probably take Matthews.
Yeah. I mean, Matthews is the best goal scorer.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
Since prime of
Kucherov would probably be next on my list.
Yep, I think that's right.
And then, but like, is Draisaitl versus Hughes? Like, I love Draisaitl. I think I might take Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, he's just such a dog, Draisaitl. Like,
he's a beast.
So much dog in him.
But like, I think it's
not
at
that
least,
Quinn Hughes doesn't.
I think it at least starts to get into like very legitimate conversation at that point. And I named four guys first.
You're not reeling off 10 names, and you're definitely not reeling another defenseman off. We just don't see defenders have this type of impact on where the game is played. The gravity that he's exerting is ridiculous.
Yeah,
he is at an absurd level.
And I think what comes with that is, as you say, people not necessarily getting on board with, or not getting on board, but like just not recognizing
media,
it.
The national media has talked more about Lane Hutson.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's just like, oh my God, what are we doing here?
But I also think we maybe haven't quite internalized the weight that having one of those players on your team, what that means for a whole season, right? In terms of like what you should expect from a team's record going forward. Like, it's just such a head start over the teams that don't have one of those four, five, six guys.
Well, I would say every game the Canucks have played this season, it's been apparent that they have the best player on the ice, and it's Quinn Hughes. And the only exception is the game in Tampa Bay where it was Nikita Kucherov.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty incredible. You know, we'll see what it looks like with Sidney Crosby and Sebastian Aho and his brother Jack Hughes coming to town. But, you know, I expect we'll get through the rest of the month and be like, yep, Quinn Hughes was the best player on the ice every game they played except for that one game against Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And that's remarkable. Okay, Mirage. I got a Mirage for you.
Okay.
Canucks power play. I'm worried. I'm real worried.
So you're saying it's been good? I mean, they scored a couple goals in Chicago.
They're 26.3% men.
Yeah, but like, okay, I guess it falls
into
the Mirage.
They're top 10 in the NHL in goals rate, 5-on-4.
Okay. It's interesting because before that, like, this is a classic thing where in small samples it changes so fast, right? Because going into that Chicago game, no one, I guarantee you, was like, the Canucks power play's been really good.
Yeah.
We were talking about it, right?
False Mirage.
So I think you could say, like, it's real that there's concerns. Like, those concerns are going to persist.
Yes.
If you want to throw it in Mirage because they got those goals and it bumped their percentage up, that's fine. But I think it's very fair to have concerns about what we've seen because it's not just a six-game sample, right? It stretches back to the playoffs and before that.
And the flip side of this, by the way, the Canucks penalty kill ticking along at 81%. That's league average. That's in line with what they did last year, more or less. It's better than what they did last year, but they're going to be even better than that.
Ooh, all right.
Penalty kill, I want to buy somewhat low on the penalty kill. I think the penalty kill is trending to be top 10 unit, maybe even better. Maybe a real strength of this team, which is wild, given where we've come a long way. But the power play or the club's penalty killing with sort of the new pressure game that they're installing, like only the Islanders and Devils are denying shot attempts at a lower rate. You know, they're top 10 by unblocked shots. Their shot rate is on the floor, you know, fringes the top five in the NHL. Teams just aren't scoring or getting set up all that regularly against Vancouver's penalty killers. And they're doing all this without the benefit of the same sort of ridiculous save percentage that most of the other teams ahead of them. You know, like you think about, go look at the top penalty killing teams in hockey and you'll see Dallas 95%, right? Well, Dallas's goaltenders have a 970 save percentage.
Yeah.
When shorthanded, like, that's not going to last.
No,
right?
It's definitely
they're
not
going to come back to the pack here. The Canucks are, you know, average-ish, getting average-ish goaltending when they're shorthanded. But the way that they're denying shots, how difficult teams are finding to get set up against them with the way they're pressuring weak side puck carriers, the pressure that they're applying, the triggers in terms of how they're pressuring the flanks, not just fronting the flanks, but like outright chasing them down. This penalty kill looks great to me. And that matches what we're seeing in terms of the underlying data. Vancouver's penalty killing is going to be a real strength of the team. The power play, maybe, but there's a lot to get sorted out there.
Man, that's an incredible turnaround.
Oh, really?
For the penalty
really
kill.
Yep.
Really? I mean, if you would even...
Well, especially when... With
a year ago, right? Predicting like, hey, the penalty kill is going to be better than power play would have seemed absurd on its face, right?
Even this summer, like they lost so much crucial penalty kill personnel, right? That... They lost so much critical penalty killing personnel over the summer that I thought it might be a trouble spot again. And instead they've like, they had the guts to be like, well, we lost Lindholm and Zadorov and Cole. Let's amp up the pressure. Let's go for it. And it's working. And hey, credit to the Canucks coaching staff. That's looked like a real strength.
They're like trying things out. You know, like Rick Togg was like, I'm giving Connor Garland some early reps on the penalty kill and stuff.
Should.
Yeah.
I mean, they're trying things out. I don't know. Like, I'm pretty sure if you ask Rick Togg it, like, hey, what do you want from White Spot? He'd be like, Connor Garland. Connor Garland's the answer for everything in this coach's mind right now.
That's another one that's on my for real list, by the way.
Yeah.
Connor Garland top six forward. Garland, key part of this team.
Jason Bruff called me a Connor Garland truther on the morning show today. What do you think? It's like, oh, sorry, I was right. Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
Truther has a negative connotation, obviously. Truther generally means you believe something that has, like, proven to be false or is not true. You know, if you're, like, a such-and-such truther. I mean, right. I don't want to go to the number one example, but
so maybe
it's kind of a downer.
Maybe I'm a rebuild truther.
Yeah.
And I remain there.
That would be.
And so I remain.
See, that would be a more accurate use of truther.
Okay, fair enough.
You were like, you got in on the ground floor of Connor Garland.
So Bruff wasn't just wrong factually. He was also wrong in terms of how he used it. It's tough.
Yeah,
day.
Like
tough
if somebody calls you a truther about something, it means you are out of step with what everyone else thinks.
With
and
reality.
You used to be that. You used to be a Garland truther. But now reality has shifted to match. Or everyone else, at least, perception of reality has shifted. So I don't think you're a
Classic.
Garland truther.
Okay.
But I do think, as you said, one, because of what he's doing on the ice, his skill, all of that, but also because of what the coach thinks, I get the value he places on a really strong third line, but I think it's going to be very, very hard to go back to Connor Garland not playing in the top six. Like, it's just how, when the coach likes him this much, when he's been this productive, he's giving him credit for driving play even with Elias Pettersson on the ice, which is totally true. Like, how do you go back to, and now he's on the third line again. It would seem very, very difficult for me. I think Connor Garland's in the top six to stay.
Yeah, and he's like, he's not just, you know, on the second line, right? He's leading this team in five on five ice time among forwards. So, you know, he's not even in the top six. He's number one.
He's playing top line minutes.
Not even top
team.
Line.
Number one minutes. Number one forward
the number
minutes.
One forward on the team, Connor Garland. Wow.
That's fantastic.
He also leads them in 5-on-5 scoring.
Yeah, he's been really good.
Yeah. And you can go back.
And I won't say necessarily that he'll lead them in 5-on-5 scoring all year, but again, just...
Oh, he might.
He might.
I'm telling you right now.
But,
like,
what I'm saying
he
is
hasn't,
real
he hasn't,
is Connor Garland being a high-impact player in the top six for this team.
But he has led them in 5-on-5 rate scoring throughout his time here. And it's like... As a matter of faith, people have been like, yeah, but you couldn't scale that up.
Yeah.
And by the way, that might be true, right? Like, as the sample expands, if Connor Garland continues to be this team's number one most used forward, we might run into that classic sort of formulation of, hey, there are some diminishing returns incurred by playing, you know, a guy who crushed it down lineup in a larger role, the so-called Tony Pollard effect, right? But that's also, you know, not necessarily going to be the case either, right? Like, there are players who get big roles and aren't quite able to sustain the performance they'd managed previously in those larger roles, but there are players that can. I don't know. I don't have a take. Like, I think the people fading Garland there will be like, in crucial moments, he's going to get pushed around because of his size. And I'm just like, I don't know. I've seen this guy get pushed around like 3 times in 5 years. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. If he was going to get pushed around, wouldn't it have happened already?
That's the thing, right? So, like he's for all the talk of, you know, oh, he does it against softer competition or whatever. I mean, like, he was out there on that road trip winning battles against Victor Hedman in Tampa Bay and stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
is Victor Hedman big?
Victor Hedman, last I checked,
is
pretty
a large
big
human being,
pretty good defenseman as well. And Connor Garland's out there doing it against him. So I think that's sticking around.
Victor Hedman rocks.
He's just really, really, really good player.
Say, really cool.
Do you have another one?
Sure. I mean, look, I can go all day. Things that are real and not real, I got you.
Yeah, I felt I was on pretty safe ground springing this one on you.
So I will say, yeah,
Can you imagine if you're like, I'm not prepared for this. I don't have anything.
So I will say, like, I'm trying to frame this the right way. On the one hand, okay, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Jake DeBrusk hasn't scored,
mm-hmm.
but he has 4 points in 6 games while he's cold. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sign of just how valuable he'll be. And maybe he gets there, but I don't think we should undersell how little is going on offensively with Jake DeBrusk. So I'm going to say, like, offensive struggles for Jake DeBrusk actually are kind of real. And I think we need to lower our expectations a little bit. So he has the 4 points, but two of them came on the power play, and he's no longer on power play one.
Yep.
So that boost might be gone,
yep.
unless he works his way back on to PP1. And I don't know. Like, I don't know. The power plays really struggled. They scored 2 goals with Garland, on that unit. Feels like that's now going to get some run here, and we'll see if they can get it sorted out. So DeBrusk might be relegated off of PP1.
It's not a spot any Canucks forward wants to be competing with ice time for Connor Garland right now.
No.
That's tough. That's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah. So how many shots at 5-on-5 do you think DeBrusk has so far this season? 6 games.
I'm going to say...
73 minutes.
Four.
Yeah, four. Four on 9 shot attempts.
Yeah, that's not great.
There's not a lot going on there.
No.
And so, you know, I think we'll see more. I don't think he's been disappointing by any means. Well, sorry, I don't think he's been disappointing, but I do think there's like an underlying concern in the scoring profile. Like, he's going to have to start shooting and attempting an awful lot more shots if he's going to get into like mid-40s range without power play one time. And given sort of the ticket, the term, the hype around him entering this season,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's like, if we end the year or if we get into January and he's got 15 points or something, like, I do think it's going to start to be a talking point locally. And right now, unless something changes, I think we're heading toward that. So I would say another thing that I'm like kind of buying is, sort of the offensive
fit questions. I think
it's not fit, because I think he's fit with what the Canucks are trying to do from a two-way perspective. I just think the production hasn't been there. The goals haven't been there. And I don't think they're necessarily going to be at the level that people, like, his over-under, his personal over-under was set at, what, 47.5, I think,
mm-hmm.
entering the season. I think if you're holding the over there, you've probably been telling yourself that, well, he's got 4 points and he hasn't even, and he's been riding through a cold streak. This is great. I'm in a good position. And my advice would be, at least you want to consider cashing out there, especially if you don't see some signs of like a higher shot rate and sort of more chances coming off his stick directly over the course of the next few games.
I also don't think the Miller-Besser Besser's off to a really good start, and he's putting the puck in the net. Some of that is power play, obviously,
and
as well.
JT is produced, too.
JT is producing as well, but I don't know that 5-on-5, that duo, has really clicked consistently yet for the Canucks, right? And obviously, I mean, that's going to be a huge... Now, Jake DeBrusk, as long as he's on that line, has a part to play in that. Of course he does. But it's also going to be a big part of whether he's able to produce, right, is how that duo is going. And I just don't feel like we've really seen like the peak version of Miller and Besser so far this year.
Well, JT Miller's not taking draws.
Yes.
And played one preseason game. So there might be an element to which that line isn't driving at the level that we'd expect them to for a bit, given...
Yep.
sort of what Miller is as an engine for this team. And so I think we probably want to adjust our expectations a little bit in the short term. Not all the way through, but while JT Miller's hobbled enough that he's not taking draws, and hobbled is the wrong word, while he's
battling through something, obviously,
while he's shy
preventing
enough,
him from taking draws. Yeah.
He's shy enough of 100% that he's not being utilized in a way that this team has tended to lean heavily on him. And that, in combination with some of the fact that, you know, line's not racking up OZP the way they did last season, I think is tied together.
All right, we'll take a break here. One final segment coming up. Still time to get your text in to the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Final segment of Canucks Talk next on Sportsnet 650.